Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome, Laura.
Good to be here, Dennis.
So much to talk about again tonight, Laura. Abortion, up for arguments at the state Supreme Court tomorrow, Tuesday. Democratic State Auditor Rob Sand in the crosshairs of some Senate Republicans. And the state legislature. Oh, yes, the state legislature. But we start tonight with the man who absolutely dominates the political world in the United States and who likely will dominate Iowa's political world in next year's GOP caucuses, Donald Trump. Former President Trump appeared in a courtroom in Manhattan last Tuesday, as you know, Laura, pleaded not guilty to 34 felony counts brought by a grand jury. Why don't you take it from there?
So this case is a little bit complicated. And again, as we discussed last week, everybody is innocent until proven guilty. The counts relate to miscategorizing business expenses. In general, there were Stormy Daniels is the main one that people know. Karen McDougal is another person. There were people who were paid during the 2016 campaign to try to keep damaging stories out of the news. And then those expenses were categorized as other things such as legal fees. And so it's possible that those could be construed as violations of a federal law if they affected the tax returns of the Trump Organization or other things. So some people were complaining last week, hey, these are really more like misdemeanor offenses than felonies. They were upgraded to felonies because in theory, these reclassifications or alleged reclassifications of business expenses were used to conceal a different crime.
So after Mr. Trump made his plea in Manhattan, he flew back to his Mar-a-Lago club in Florida and made a grievance-filled speech. That's the only way to describe it. He is not expected to show up again in court until at least December. Now, among the more interesting things in the wake of this last week, a new Reuters poll released on Friday showed Mr. Trump ahead of his nearest Republican rival, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, by a big margin, bigger than he was before the indictment.
So there are two parallel trends happening right now in public opinion. First of all, among Republicans, Trump is rising and DeSantis is falling. DeSantis's peak was soon after the November 2022 election. There was a perception that Trump-backed candidates didn't do very well in the midterms and that the Republican Party might need to move on. But ever since then, Trump has been gaining at the expense of DeSantis. However, in other polls of the entire national public or electorate, and not just Republicans, Trump is receding a little bit. His strongly favorable numbers are a bit down. His unfavorable numbers are a bit up. I just listened to a talk earlier today by Ann Seltzer, the pollster who does the Des Moines Register's Iowa poll and the Grinnell College national poll. And she mentions this, that Trump is doing better among Republicans, but that doesn't mean that this story isn't hurting him among the broader public.
Republicans quickly rallied around Mr. Trump, including Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds. She said she had not looked at the indictment, but that didn't matter. She said it was politically motivated.
Yes, and that was the script that almost all Republicans were following when the former president was indicted, that this was a politically motivated hit job and an illegitimate prosecution. So again, it'll be interesting to see what happens. It is possible that Donald Trump could be indicted in other cases in other jurisdictions later this year. And so at some point, I think Republicans may need to comment on cases that are easier to understand than this one that's related to business expenses.
Another prominent Republican, this one Arizona gubernatorial candidate, former gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake, came to Iowa last week, and she made a number of red meat presentations in Iowa. Among them, she claimed without evidence, not a scintilla of evidence, if I could say that, that she won the gubernatorial race in Arizona. She did not, and then she said she'd do anything she can to help Mr. Trump.
Carrie Lake is clearly trying to raise her profile in Iowa. She grew up in Scott County, not far from the Quad Cities, and she still has family here, but she's coming back. She seems to be a popular speaker at Republican events. And as you say, I mean, she did lose. The Arizona governor's race was close, but it really wasn't recount close. She lost by about 17,000 votes. So she filed a bunch of legal filings afterwards. She didn't have any success in showing that there was anything, there was any election misconduct at all. So, but this is something that she is clearly not willing to concede on.
Right. And former Arkansas Governor Hutchinson, he's a Hutchinson who is running for president. He's announced it. He's coming back to Iowa again this Thursday and Friday.
Yes, and he is, of all of the candidates, he is the only one who took a somewhat different position following Donald Trump's indictment. He said, we have to wait and see. It's very serious. And he has said that he thinks that the Republican Party should turn the page on Trump. But he was the only one who didn't join in bashing the prosecutor and saying that this was completely illegitimate.
All right, let's move back to state government. We have a ton to talk about. Last week, Governor Reynolds signed the government reorganization bill, a mere 1,500 pages or so. It is now law.
Yes, and this was one that the legislature hardly amended at all. The Democrats proposed dozens of amendments, and a handful of Republicans voted for some of those amendments. But overall, this bill was passed in almost exactly the form that the governor's office proposed it. Although the governor has talked about how the main purpose was to streamline state government, it really does a lot more than that. So it centralizes authority in several areas. The attorney general now is going to have authority to reach in and take cases from county attorney's offices. Also, the attorney general is now going to have exclusive authority to investigate or prosecute election-related crimes. The attorney general is going to have more power over the Office of Consumer Advocate, and the governor is going to have more power to set the salaries of the top agency leaders to also, those will be unlimited. There won't be a legislative limit on that. The governor gained the power to hire and fire certain officials who currently were under the previous law, were appointed by boards. The community-based corrections, which are decentralized right now, there are regional boards that govern those. Those are all going to be centralized within the Department of Corrections. So they're really just an enormous number of changes in this government reorganization. And I think I heard somebody describe it as the Lobbyist Full Employment Act, because the legislature may be back in the next year or two to fix some issues that may arise.
Democrats criticize the law's expansion of the governor's powers, but that's really all they can do is criticize. They had no power to make any real changes there. It was a quiet week, by the way, in the state legislature, and I haven't said that since the first of the year. Let me repeat it. It was a quiet week relatively in the state legislature, but things did happen. There was no floor debate in the Senate, but things happened.
I mean, that was really unusual. Like I said, no floor debate in the Iowa Senate for all 4 days. I mean, that doesn't usually happen. They did move, as we discussed last Monday, the Senate Appropriations Committee moved some budget bills that didn't have any numbers in them or dollar amounts, but really not much going on in the upper chamber. And that suggests to me that we may be in a holding pattern for a while.
But something did happen in the House big time. It passed a giant education bill on Tuesday. The GOP leaders stitching together several already passed bills that are complex and complicated, part of the original bill that Governor Reynolds proposed. So where do we stand with this now?
So this is very different. As I mentioned, the state government reorganization was passed almost in exactly the same form the governor proposed. This governor's education bill has really been changed a lot. So most of the core pieces that the governor proposed are still in the bill. The only thing that's missing is the civics test, where she said high school students to graduate would have to be able to pass the U.S. citizenship exam. That's out. But most of the new restrictions on library books, new restrictions on teaching, a curriculum of gender identity and sexual orientation, the school districts not being able to support transgender students without parental approval, and lots of things, all of that is still in the bill. But the Iowa House, they changed some of that language, and then they also added language from about a half a dozen bills that they had approved in February or March, and that the Senate had mostly not acted on. So there are just many different policy changes, and I'm not sure whether the Senate is going to appoint a conference committee to work this out. I mean, at some point, something resembling this education bill is going to land on Kim Reynolds' desk, but I don't know how many of these House proposals are going to still make it in. Like, for instance, one changes the composition of the state's education board, licensing board, very substantially. And that's something that the Senate had not acted on. And I just don't know how much interest there is on the Senate side in keeping that in the governor's bill.
Unless you're really following this, as you and I do, you certainly more than I, because you're right there on the ground, I would imagine the public is completely confused now about what's still alive out there on this.
Oh, yes, very much. I mean, I think that there's a vague awareness about that they're trying to do something with library books. I mean, that's kind of out there and prohibiting instruction on gender identity and sexual orientation. But a lot of the parts of the bill are very complicated. I mean, some of them are things that the schools would have to post prominently on their websites, information about how people can challenge classroom material or library books. Also, I mean, I thought one thing that I thought was interesting that was in the House amendment, a 38-page amendment, as I was trawling through that, was that in the section on school transparency, where it talks about all these ways that schools have to make it easier for parents and guardians to challenge, it also said that the identity of people who try to get books removed from the library or materials removed from the classroom, that will be considered confidential and not subject to disclosure under Iowa's public records law.
And one more thing in the State House last week, Democrats proposed capping insulin costs and freezing university tuition. None of that will happen, but they proposed it.
Yeah, so this is part of the House Democrats. Before the election, they had this agenda that included protecting reproductive rights, lowering costs for Iowans, legalizing marijuana. So we've seen throughout the session periodically, the Democrats have introduced bills to legalize marijuana. We discussed in a previous week the different ways that modeled on the Michigan policy that would protect reproductive rights. And now last week they introduced this package. Again, they're under no illusions that this is going to advance, but their position is just because Republicans won't debate our bills doesn't mean that we aren't going to be out there talking about lowering childcare costs, creating more affordable housing, lowering, like for instance, capping the cost of insulin for Iowans, expanding the use of renewable energy to reduce people's utility bills. So these are all issues that Democrats want to be talking about, even though they know their legislation won't advance.
And briefly, in the state Senate, the Senate started the process of confirming Governor Reynolds' appointees to state boards and commissions.
Is the governor nominates hundreds of people a year, and almost all of them are confirmed unanimously or almost unanimously. So what the Senate tends to do is they have different committees meet with the different nominees, and then usually they're confirmed in blocks of several dozen at a time, will get a floor vote. Sometimes if the minority party wants to pull a controversial nominee out of that block, they might have a separate vote. But since the Republicans right now have 34 of the 50 Iowa Senate seats, that's a two-thirds majority already. The Democrats are not in a position to block any of the governor's nominees this year. And I haven't heard of any particular nominees who are highly controversial. Usually there will be one or two or three a year that arouse a lot of controversy.
And last week, we spent a considerable amount of time talking about bills that were still alive and those that weren't after the legislative funnel. There are still some bills we didn't get to. Laura, briefly go over them.
So one is related to open records, and this is just one that's of interest to me and a lot of other journalists. This is something that would make it easier for people who are trying to seek records. It would say that government bodies have to quickly acknowledge that you filed a records request. They have to tell you who is the person in charge. They have to give you an estimate for how long it's going to take and how much it's going to cost to compile the records. And that one is on the unfinished business calendar right now. So who knows? I mean, most bills on the unfinished calendar don't come back, but sometimes they do.
And that is still alive. What are some bills that are dead?
That one. Oh, another one that's still alive, and this affects KHOI's listening area, is the plan to change county supervisor elections for a few counties, and one of those would be Story County. But that one has been deferred in the House, and I don't know whether House leaders plan to bring it back to the floor. As to the bills that are dead, there was another proposal for the related to open records and open meetings complaints that would say Iowans have a longer amount of time to file complaints with the Iowa Public Information Board. That would have extended that from 60 to 90 days. It was passed unanimously in the House, but it did not find support in the Senate. A range of bills related to campaign finance and election issues, governing election recounts, governing whether Iowa is going to regulate recurring campaign contributions, all of those are dead. And I don't know whether any of them will come back next year. Another one that passed, again, this passed with overwhelming support in the House in February, that is designed to protect the media from frivolous defamation lawsuits. And that one just never got, it got out of a subcommittee in the Senate, but it never got through a full committee in time for that second funnel deadline.
We're going to take a 20-second time out here before we catch our breath and move right on. It's about 15 after the hour, wherever you're listening to us, and you are in tune. With KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin, and we're here every week at this time to talk about politics Iowa style, how it's affecting all of us. I teased off the top of this broadcast that Senate Republicans were teeing up Rob Sand. It's all because of a state Supreme Court decision.
So this one, the Senate Republicans, I mean, they were trying to sandwich this Iowa Supreme Court decision into the bill that they tried to pass in March. The two are really unrelated. But this is a case where the state auditor, Rob Sand, went to court to try to enforce a subpoena. He was successful in doing that in 2021. The Iowa Supreme Court unanimously affirmed that he did have the right to subpoena information from the University of Iowa related to a utilities deal. This was a rather obscure case. It stemmed from some reporting by Ryan Foley of the Associated Press in 2019 about the Iowa Communities Assurance Pool, which is a group of local governments. It's related to insurance. I mean, I had literally not even heard of this organization, but they were spending money on lavish board meetings, annual board meetings at out-of-state resorts, luxury resorts, and travel. And so Rob Sand wanted to audit them. But the question at issue in this case was, is this Iowa Communities Assurance Pool really the kind of government body that the state auditor has the authority to audit? And the Iowa Supreme Court held unanimously on Friday that no, this is not filed. It was not created under the code section that would allow the state auditor to audit their activities. So then, as you mentioned, the Republicans in the Iowa Senate who are pushing this bill to limit the auditor's powers, they seized on this ruling to say that this proves that Rob Sand exceeded his authority, and therefore we need to take much more safeguards and prevent him from conducting some of the audits he's been doing.
And speaking of that bill to restrict the auditor's powers, the nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency said a bill restricting the auditor's office could limit the auditor's ability to oversee billions of dollars in state and federal money.
So this really validates what Rob Sand argued when after the Iowa Senate approved this bill along party lines in March, and the National Association of State Auditors and the former U.S. Comptroller General and the National Association of CPAs, they all submitted letters saying this bill is really dangerous and it could jeopardize Iowa's federal funding, because by limiting the information that the auditor can access, that limits the auditor's office ability to conduct routine audits of programs like Medicaid, student loans, all kinds of things that do involve having access to some people's private information. So what the Nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency, when they did their fiscal note, it really just affirmed what those other people had said. It wasn't exactly breaking new ground, but it said if the auditor's office is not able to express an informed opinion on what's happening with these state and federal funds, that that could jeopardize quite a lot of federal funding.
And finally, on the legislature, it hopes to adjourn by Friday, April 28th. Will it make it?
I'm really skeptical of that. That gives them less than 3 weeks, and they are nowhere close to having agreement. They don't even have agreement on overall global budget targets for like the big areas of the state budget, let alone agreement on how much to spend on specific state agencies. Then there are a lot of bills in the mix. For instance, the state auditor bill that we just talked about, the House State Government Committee did approve that before the final deadline, but they talked about a very significant amendment to it. There are quite a few other bills that are still floating out there, where this education bill we talked about, the two parties don't agree so far on how to limit trucking companies' liability and lawsuits. I mean, there are just a lot of issues out there, and the state budget is an enormous one. And I just am skeptical that within the next 3 weeks they can get this wrapped up.
And here's going to be a surprise for about 500,000 Iowa voters. They have now been removed to the inactive status. What does that mean?
Well, it's a surprise to them, but it's not a surprise to anyone who follows Iowa election law. So Iowa, the way the voter rolls are maintained is every 2 years, the Secretary of State's office sends out a letter to registered voters confirming that whether you're still registered at that address. And things, when these postcards or when mailings bounce back, then people can be removed from the voter rolls, or the voter rolls can be cleaned up. But the inactive list is the first step toward eventually being moved off the voter rolls. So I've seen some people call it a purge. It's not exactly a purge of the voter rolls, because all of these 500,000 Iowans are still registered to vote in Iowa. But because they have been moved to the inactive list, it means that 4 years down the road, they could be removed from the roll. So now, why are so many being removed from the list right now? It used to be that if you missed two general elections in a row, so a presidential election and a midterm, then you would be moved to this inactive list. One of the bills that Republicans approved in 2021, one of the many election-related bills that have been approved in recent years, changed this so that if you miss even one general election, you're moved onto this inactive list. And of course, hundreds of thousands of people routinely just only vote in a presidential year and don't vote in a midterm. So it was very predictable that with a midterm election, when turnout is always going to be lower than a presidential year, that you would have lots of people moved onto this inactive list. Now, it doesn't mean they can't vote. They could come, they could vote in any local, state, or federal election over the next several years, and they can get themselves back on the active voter registration list that way.
All right. And briefly, you reported last week that the Democratic National Committee is going to target Iowa's 1st and 3rd District GOP congressional incumbents in next year's election. We're talking Marionette Miller Meeks and Zach Nunn. Why are they targeting them, and what does that mean?
So this is the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. It's the political arm of the U.S. House Democrats. They need a net gain of 5 seats in the U.S. House to gain control after the 2024 election. And last week, they released a list of 31 Republican-held seats that they're targeting. Two of those are in Iowa, as you mentioned, the 1st District, Marionette Miller Meeks, and the 3rd District, Zach Nunn. What was interesting to me is that they left Ashley Hinson off that list. She represents the 2nd District in the northeast corner of the state. In the last election cycle, the DCCC said that they were going to target all of those three Republicans. They've basically given up on Ashley Hinson at this point. But this is the long list of 31 seats. It doesn't mean that they'll be spending a significant amount of money in all of those seats. And that's going to be the big question is, will Democrats have a credible candidate in either of those races? And how much money will national Democratic aligned groups spend to try to win them back? But in any case, the Democrats in Washington see two of Iowa's 4 seats as potentially being in play for the next election.
We have 7 minutes left on this broadcast, and we're going to spend most of it talking about abortion because it's big and it's coming up. First, Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd put a hold on a longtime policy of paying for emergency contraception and, in some cases, abortions for sexual assault victims.
So this is money from the Victim Compensation Fund. It is not taxpayer money. It's paid for, it comes from the federal government, but it's paid for out of fines and fees that people pay after they're convicted of crimes. And this has been the longstanding policy under Attorney General Tom Miller, is that any expenses after a sexual assault that this fund would cover, and that included emergency contraception and, in rare cases, abortions. And the Attorney General's office, I mean, I've been trying to get information about this. Other people were also chasing the story. And last week, the Attorney General's office confirmed that, yes, Brenna Byrd did put a hold on that. Apparently, she's reviewing the policy and she hasn't made any final decision. But this got a lot of national attention over the weekend. A number of news organizations picked up the Associated Press story on it, which came from the Des Moines Register. The Iowa Public Radio also had a story. So this is something that I'm sure we haven't heard the last about this.
And tomorrow, the Iowa Supreme Court is going to hear oral arguments in a big case. Governor Reynolds' request that the court overturn a previous ruling that struck down a law, 2018 law, that would have banned abortions once a fetal heartbeat can be detected 6 weeks of pregnancy. This is a big one tomorrow. No decision tomorrow, but arguments.
Yeah. So at the time that the Republicans and the legislature passed this law in 2018, it was the strictest anti-abortion law in the country. Governor Reynolds signed it. It never went into effect because there was immediately a lawsuit filed. It was put on hold. It was struck down in early 2019. And the governor did not appeal that lower court decision because at the time, the Iowa Supreme Court, the way it was configured, they would have certainly upheld that decision striking down the law. So now they're going back to court. And there are a lot of ways that this case could be decided. And we probably won't know for about 60 to 90 days what the court could do. But the whole range of options from just rejecting this by saying procedurally, it's too late, this is a closed case, the legislature needs to pass a new law for us to consider, or going all the way to the other end of the spectrum, which is what the governor and the state are asking for, which is that they could say, look, the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. That means that the basis for striking down this law is no longer operative. And so we will allow this 2018 law to go into effect. There are a lot of really complicated legal procedural arguments, but almost any kind of ruling is possible. But it's very possible that the state Supreme Court can resolve this case without indicating whether they think it's constitutional to ban all abortions after about 6 weeks.
You'll be there for the arguments tomorrow. We'll talk about it on Monday night on Capitol Week. Meanwhile, last week, the status of a key abortion medication was cast into complete uncertainty on Friday with two contradictory judicial decisions.
So this is one that the Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd has been involved in. There was a lawsuit in Texas, and she joined about 20 Republican attorneys general to file a brief supporting this effort by a group of doctors to try to revoke the Food and Drug Administration's approval of mifepristone. This is a drug, originally it was known as RU486, if you're old enough to remember that. It's the main drug used in medication abortions, which is more than half of abortions in the country at this time. And they are, this judge in Texas, it was filed in that jurisdiction because this judge was considered very likely to look favorably on the lawsuit. And indeed, that is what happened. He issued a ruling that if it's allowed to go into effect, would say that the FDA has to revoke its approval and this mifepristone can't be distributed anywhere in the country. But then there was another ruling by a federal judge in Washington state that said no to the FDA. You cannot stop allowing this drug to be sold and distributed. So probably this case is headed back to certainly appeals courts and probably back to the U.S. Supreme Court at some point, because it will create a lot of confusion. But Iowa is involved on the side of trying to make the main medication for abortion inaccessible nationwide.
We have 3 minutes to go. Meanwhile, Iowa lawmakers are unlikely to act on bills this year to expand Medicaid coverage to new moms for 12 months after they give birth. That's a big deal.
Yes, it is. This is something that the state public health agency has been recommending for several years, and it's been documented to reduce maternal mortality when states extend Medicaid coverage. Iowa right now is among a small group of states that only provides 60 days of Medicaid coverage after somebody gives birth, and getting it to 12 months would possibly prevent a number of the infections and other issues that happen later in that first postpartum year, which tends to be a more perilous year for people who have given birth. The key lawmakers in the House are just not interested in adding that to the bill. I listened today, the Senate Appropriations Committee had a subcommittee hearing on the governor's healthcare proposal, and several of the people who spoke urged the senators to add this 12 months Medicaid postpartum coverage to the bill, but they didn't seem to be getting any traction with the Republicans on the committee.
And quickly, there are a couple of possible updates on Iowa's ban on transgender girls and women playing sports, one of them involving the Biden administration.
So the Biden administration had initially said that Title IX doesn't allow states to or schools to restrict participation for transgender people in sports. But they issued new guidance last week, and it was presented as a compromise. I don't know how many people would view it as a compromise, but basically it would say that blanket bans of girls and transgender girls and women participating on teams that align with their gender identity, those would not be allowable. Those would be considered a violation of Title IX, this federal law from the 1970s. However, it did say that schools could exclude transgender athletes from certain teams or certain sports, depending on the grade level and the level of competition. So it's not clear. I mean, this was condemned. Governor Reynolds condemned this. The people who have supported outright bans on transgender girls and women in sports, they don't like this. And then within the LGBTQ advocacy community, some people are very uneasy about it because it could mean that maybe at the elementary or junior high school level, transgender kids would be able to participate. But then at the high school level, they might be kicked off those teams. So not clear how that's going to play out.
And briefly, we only have 1 minute left. Worth noting, the U.S. Supreme Court declined to lift a stay last week on West Virginia's blanket ban, similar to what Iowa passed last year. And no one has yet filed a legal challenge to Iowa's transgender ban.
Right. Iowa's law is in effect. The law governor signed in 2022 is in effect. Nobody has challenged it. I think eventually this West Virginia case will get to the U.S. Supreme Court. And then, of course, whatever they decide would affect all of the state laws restricting transgender participation in sports, including Iowa's.
Laura, who says this isn't action news? What are you going to be doing? You're at the Supreme Court tomorrow. Where else are you going?
Supreme Court tomorrow, I'll be keeping an eye on whether they're going to debate anything really important in the legislature this week. I want to see if there's any progress on the budget. I want to see if the House is going to debate that bill we've talked about in the past that would limit public assistance, people on food assistance and Medicaid. So wondering whether that's going to come up on the House floor this week.
We're out of time and we're out of breath. We'll see you next week.
See you next week, Dennis.
You have been listening to Capital Week, otherwise known as Action News, on KHOI Community Radio, your listening post for politics, Iowa style. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I are your anchors, and we'll be back next week in the same time slot when we'll talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics in Iowa. We hope you can join us. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it. We value it. Between now and next time, we hope you have a safe, happy, and healthy week.